Okay. So, something that struck me years ago about Parshat Kedoshim, and I haven't quite been able to shake it since then. I don't know if it's a chiddush. I don't think it is, but I think it's worth noting because it's important. When I was in Toronto, I used to teach not a Parsha year, but like a Chumash year. So we went slowly through so I could teach as much as I wanted in every Parsha, which of course that meant that I always had, when I needed to give a Parsha year, I have many per Parsha. When I was about to teach Kedoshim, I had just, as some of you are, finished Jonathan Haidt's The Righteous Mind. Have you finished?
No.
Started. Okay, he started. Started's good too. Started's good too.
It's slower to read on like the phone.
It is. Reading on phones, I hate. I really think anything on my phone, it just takes me so much longer to read on my phone. It's a nightmare. Yeah, I'd rather either a hard copy book or an audio, but reading a book on my phone. I know Adam likes it more, but he likes the blue light as it plays with his brain.
Oh, no, I can't. Night mode.
Okay, fine. Anyways, when I was reading that book, it struck me. And again, I don't think it's a chiddush. I think part of what Haidt does in that book is less be mechadesh and more show how what we do is a chiddush and walk us back to the normal, to what most people in the world feel. But one of the things that really struck me about the book is, well, let's see, Sean. What's his basic thesis? Even just the, you know, right off the bat.
Rationality is built to serve the emotions or like the intuitive inclinations of.
Okay, and what else does he say? Right, meaning he makes a. Oh, so I don't know how far you've gotten in the book, right? But what's his claim about the way people perceive morality? Have you gotten that far?
Like people perceive morality.
Like or categorize morality, or you haven't gotten that far.
The whole virtue thing.
Yeah. Okay, fine. So you haven't quite got there. So I'll give away a little bit of what's coming, right? But one of the things he notes, right, meaning the subtitle to the book is, right, The Righteous Mind, Why Good People Argue About Religion and Politics, I think, are divided by religion and politics, something like that. His basic argument is that it's not just that we disagree on details, but Western morality has limited itself to a certain types of principles that even get to be called moral. Right? Other things, even if they're important, they're not moral. Right? Like morality in Western thought has basically, right, he divided it into six axes of morality. Three of which are part of the Western canon and the rest of which are not. That is the care harm axis, the liberty oppression axis, and the fairness cheating axis, right? Those are all things that we, broadly speaking, call moral in Western philosophical thought. And then there are three others, which maybe we talk about as values, but are not moral. And that's loyalty, betrayal, borderline there, right? Authority, subversion, right? And sanctity, degradation, the last one being obviously the least morally discussed, right? And what his theme throughout the book is basically that part of the reason that the left and the right can't talk to each other is because, the left will say things like, you don't care about the poor mother who can't raise her child, right? And they'll respond something like, the sanctity of life. Or something like that, right? Naked. I'm oversimplifying because as Peter Berkowitz notes, the abortion case is really a bad example. And Peter Berkowitz has argued that the abortion case, the reason it keeps sort of is alive in America, alive and well, is because it's framed as rights versus rights, and therefore it's a very American debate, right? As opposed to like gay rights, which is framed as rights versus not rights in favor of something else, right? So one of those eventually just, right, in America just doesn't function well, right, because any argument against rights in America eventually sort of right, doesn't fit, as opposed to rights versus rights, the rights of the mother versus the rights of the child. It's a very American conversation, because you can never quite say that that's, right, you, right, because of the discourse is so rights-oriented, if both sides are rights, so then that helps the argument. But for the sake of argument, right, what he notes is that people will say things, or maybe, you know, actually, no, maybe the gay rights is a better example for that reason, right, is that the left will say you don't care about morality, because morality is fairness, right, oppression, right, bein olam lechaveros, more or less, right? Now, the right, when they say things like family values and the like, right, the left hears, I care about other things more than morality. Right? Haidt's insight is that that's not true, is that traditional morality, right, or systems of value, if you want to be, right, actually integrate things like sanctity into morality itself, right? Meaning it's not like you have morality and you have sanctity and you have obedience to parents, to loyalty to family, right? Those are actually values that are in the same system as care, harm, you know, equity, things like that. Meaning, right, and therefore his fundamental argument is the reason people don't get along is because they don't actually have the same axes, right? Meaning, if you believe that the only, right, meaning if we all agree that the most important thing is morality, but you think that only bin adam l'chaveros essentially count as morality, then any argument which isn't bin adam l'chavero, let's say, is an external imposition on morality, and therefore you care about something, right? You're not making a moral argument because you're making an argument from sanctity. You're making an argument from authority, right? So you don't care about morality, right? And Haidt's argument was that if you go and if you just use anthropology, right now, I'll be very careful. This is why I like Haidt a lot. Haidt himself self-defines on the American liberal side, right? More libertarian, but for these purposes, liberal, right? He's not saying this as a moral judgment. Right? He's not saying this as a value judgment. He's saying this descriptively, right? That if the left wants to understand the right, they have to realize that the right actually is channeling most moral or value systems in the history of the world, which incorporated those values into the exact same system of values as what the West calls morality. Is that clear? Right? Right. It's a right. You'll get through it. But right, this is like the right tamsit of the argument. Right? Is that the reason that the left and right can't talk to each other is because they don't agree what axes get to count as moral axes, right? And therefore, it doesn't become an argument of weighing, right? It's not like, right, right? Some arguments are arguments of weighing expressions of value on the same axis, right? So like if we said, should you let someone who's in pain, sick and in pain, die, right? So obviously there's a lot of factors. But let's say we would argue just on the following lines, where one group would say the person is in pain, they have the right to die, right? Not necessarily to kill them, then you're introducing other factors. But, right, they have the right not to be saved, right, to let themselves die, okay? Let's make it somewhat simple. If the counterargument was, but the family isn't ready to lose them, right, then on the level of pain and suffering, you're actually arguing the same axis, right? Right, you're just saying, whose pain do we care about? And then you start introducing other factors like autonomy, like sanctity of life, right? But at that moment, you're arguing on the same axis, right? If you said, no, it doesn't matter how much pain you're in, right, sanctity of life demands that you extend life as much as possible, now you're arguing pain, suffering, whatever, versus sanctity, right? And now you're talking in two different axes, right? But if one group doesn't recognize the existence of one of those axes, or at least not as moral and therefore not as legitimate to bring into the conversation with moral values, right, then you have a real conflict, because one group is going to say you don't care about morality, and the other one says, no, we just have, right, a more holistic view of what counts as morality. Okay? Now, why am I going in this whole sort of philosophical discourse on this, right, or even anthropological, whatever you want to call this? And here the insight, I think, is pretty simple, which is, as Haidt notes, this is not like two competing views in the West. It's really the modern West versus all of history and most traditional societies nowadays, right? The claim that there's a sharp divide between moral values, which are basically Ben Adam L'Chaveros and Ben Adam L'Makoms, right, is not traditional, right? I don't mean within the Jewish canon. It's just not traditional, right? Most traditional systems of value understood that there were interactions between these and that they were part of the same discourse rather than two different discourses. Right. This brings me back to the point I said I would talk about yesterday, but now it's pretty quick, right? Which is, when you read Parshat Kiddushim, right, which is, as we already talked about yesterday, is the parsha which really defines our goals as a Jewish people, right? Mamlechet Kohanim Goy Kadosh, as the Midrash says, right? The Gufei Torah are Tluyin Ba, and it, you know, and it has to be said b'hakel, because everyone has to hear it, right? This is very important parsha. You realize that the Torah is, I wouldn't say is going out of its way to do this, because in a traditional world, it doesn't need to go out of its way to do this, but read as a modern Western reader, it would seem that the Torah is going out of its way to respond to the reductionist definition of morality in the West, right? But obviously that's, right, anachronistic, because it's living in a world where this is probably the given, right, is that there is no sharp line, right? And if you read just Perek Yutet, right, so the first mitzvah is, or the first thing you hear is Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem, right, which is some combination of an authority statement and a sanctity statement, right? But then you get Ish Imo V'Aviv Kira'u, which is 100% authority, right? The inherent value of authority, right? Ve'et shabtotai dishmaru, and keep Shabbat, which has a sanctity component, right? Probably has a loyalty component, right? Al tifnu el ha'elilim, right? Avodah Zarah is clearly on the loyalty axis. Right. What else would you put it on?
Authority.
It's authority act. It's loyalty. Right. Meaning it's definitely authority, but it's also loyalty. Right. Meaning you think how it is in the Aseret Hadibro. Right. I took you out of Egypt, so don't worship anybody else. That's loyalty. Right. Loyalty and authority. But then in the exact same parsha, as you continue, right, you get leket. Right. You get leket shechah and peah. Right. Leave the corner of your field, leave things to the poor, which is care harm, which is equity, right? Right? La'aniv la'ger tazovo tam ani Hashem elokeichem. And even there, leave it to the poor because I am God, right? Meaning there is care and whatever, but that's intrinsically linked to authority or, right, or loyalty, whatever you think is captured in I am God, right? And then you get lo tignovu, don't steal, lo tichachashu, lo tishakru ish b'amido, don't steal, right? Don't lie in court, right? Which is, right, care harm, but also oppression, right? I mean, don't steal, don't, right, oppress people, don't. Lo tishavu b'shmi lashaker, right? Don't swear falsely. I don't know, right? But it's definitely not the classic moral three, right? Is it loyalty? Is it sanctity? Right? Authority? Probably a little bit of all of those. Lo ta'ashoket re'acha, right? Don't oppress your fellow. Right? I don't need to say which of the, right? Lo tigzo, lo talintu latzacher itchad boker, right? Don't hold over the wages of a worker until morning, right? I mean, pay your worker who's lower on the socioeconomic scale right away. Lo tekalel cheresh, don't curse the deaf. Right? Which is oppression, right? Meaning the people who are disadvantaged. Don't take advantage of them. But how is that pasuk sealed off? V'yarita me'alkecha, fear God, ani Hashem. Right? Meaning, don't take advantage of the weak because I am God. Right? That mix again. And right, we could go through the whole parak. But lotase avel b'mishpat. Right? Don't have injustice in court. Right? Justice, oppression, etc. Lo telech rachil. Right? Don't be a gossip monger. Lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha. Don't hate your friend. Ochech tochiach enamidecha. Rebuke him. Right? Which literally in the same pasuk, right? Love your friend is paired with, but rebuking him presumably on because of his responsibilities to others and to God. And then kilayim, which is a paradigmatic chok, right? Shatnez, and then again same parak. Some of the arayot, right? Specifically that of shivcha charufa, right? And that's the 22 psukim that appear in just that parshia. From a Western perspective, it sounds, or parsha, whatever you want to call it, right? But sometimes parshia is used to distinguish it from colloquial parsha. Fine. I understand. But this, again, so this was, do I think this is like a radical chiddush? No. Right? But I do think that someone who's grown up in the West where morality, i.e. Ben Adam L'Chavero, is sharply distinguished from things like authority and sanctity and even loyalty, right? Reads Kedoshim as, yeah, meaning, I'll put it this way, they would read it, right? If a person grew up in the West had to summarize Parashat Kedoshim, they would say, it's a mix of moral and religious law, right? Right? But what I realized after reading Haidt is that's a category mistake. Right? Means that is superimposing Western taxonomy, modern Western taxonomy, onto a traditional value system. And the whole point is that, this is exactly Haidt's point, is that traditional morality, which as he said, is still the moral systems of most cultures in the world, and the intuitive culture, even if not stated this way, of the right, of the conservative side of America, meaning most value systems were complex, right? And therefore, to read this paragraph and say, oh, it's moral and religious value, is to fail to recognize that traditional moral systems or value systems did not distinguish that way, and to distinguish that way is to miss the whole point that is exactly not how traditional value systems understand themselves, and I'll just end with this, and that's why when the Torah might have, let's say, lead you to a conflict between care harm and loyalty, or care harm sanctity, right, the Torah doesn't expect you to experience that as a modern Western person would, as a conflict between morality and an external value system, but rather as a balancing of values within a more expansive system, right? And that's something that I think is just important to recognize in ourselves. And again, it's not a chiddush. It's walking back the chiddush of the division of modern philosophy, right? Back towards what's obviously the case in a traditional system, where those are integrated into one pantheon of values. Okay?